from the list of these prayers, and we'll kind of follow up on those as time goes by and see what the Lord is doing for us. All right, this evening, if you've got your Bibles with you, turn over to Hebrews. And Hebrews chapter 12 is where we are at. According to my notes, this is the 43rd message in Hebrews. You should know Hebrews backwards and forwards by now, or either so tired of it you're ready to go to something else. But Hebrews chapter 12, of course, Hebrews chapter 11 was the faith chapter. And now we're in the race chapter. Do you remember Hebrews chapter 12 was the kind of the picture of a big race? And let me just start out by saying that everybody, I would say virtually everybody in the world, wants to go to heaven. Is there anyone here who does not want to go to heaven? Bernice, you want to, don't you? Sonia wants to. Everybody wants to go to heaven. And if you go out into the streets and you ask the masses of people if they would like to go to heaven, if they are honest with you and not just being rebellious, they certainly would say, yes, I would like to go to heaven. You remember the story of Balaam in the book of Numbers. Balak was the king of Moab, and he sent Balaam out to curse Israel. Did we get it started? We did. Okay, thank you. And he sent Balaam out to curse Israel. And when he opened his mouth to curse Israel, out came a blessing. You remember that story, don't you? And Balaam began to see the glory of Israel and the glory of the God of Israel, because he couldn't curse them. Out of his mouth came blessings every time. And he said, though he was, I'm sure, not a godly man, yet he said, let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. Everybody would like to die like the righteous. They would love to die like the righteous, and they, in the end, they would love to have the destiny of the righteous. But few there are who will run the race of the righteous. Oh, how they would like to go to heaven, but they have no desire to run the race. Even fewer there are that run the race the right way. Some run the race after Mohammed. Some run after Joseph Smith. Some run after Moses. People run after all kinds of gods and all kinds of various religions. But Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh to the Father but by me. There is only one race, after all, that leads to the gates of heaven, and that is the race that Jesus Christ has set before us. Only those who run His race will obtain the prize in the end. Now, you can run yourself silly on another race course all you want to, and in the end you will look around for someone to hand you the trophy, and Jesus will say, depart from me, I never knew you. And instead of getting a prize, you will get a surprise, and you will be so surprised to see that your reward is the eternal wrath of God. We are in a race, this passage says. This passage in Hebrews chapter 12 confirms that as Christians, we are in a great race. And that is why it says in verse 1, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Now, this is not the only passage in the Scriptures that refers to the Christian life in terms of a race. Take a look at 1 Corinthians 9:24. Keep your thumb there in Hebrews 12. But go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 24, and there you will see, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. So you see that when we have come to Christ, we have lined up at the starting line to run the race. Now, when runners line up to run a race, they know that in the end, only one will receive the prize. Now, wouldn't that be a silly race if 15 people lined up at the starting race and they ran the race and then they gave everybody a trophy, the same trophy, at the end? There may be 3,000 runners in the Boston Marathon, but in the end, one person will cross the line ahead of all the others and he will receive the trophy. Now, I'm sure you're probably saying, Brother Ron, is there only going to be one person who will get to heaven in the end? And of course, the Scriptures teach that there will be a countless multitude who will receive the prize of eternal life in the end. The analogy there in 1 Corinthians is not designed to teach that only one will get the prize. Rather, it is teaching that we must run the race as though only one will win. Look at that again in verse 24. 1 Corinthians 9:24. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? You see, that's the general rule when you're running a foot race. Now let's convert that over to what he's teaching us spiritually. He says, So run that ye may obtain. So how are we to run? We are to run just as in foot races, as though only one will receive the prize. How much effort does a runner put into the race? Well, he gives it everything he has. And this is the story of the Christian life. You are to run the Christian race as though it is necessary to outrun all others. Now, it reminds me of a story there that two men were out walking in the hills of East Tennessee, and all of a sudden, out from the bushes, appeared what lives in East Tennessee? Grizzly bears. So out of the bushes popped a grizzly bear, a ferocious grizzly bear, and it was obvious that this bear had an evil intent, and he raised up on his hind feet, and he was showing his teeth. And it was obvious that he was looking for a meal and he was about to have one. And one of the men threw off his hiking boots and quickly put on his tennis shoes. And his friend said, "What are you doing? Don't you know that we can't outrun a grizzly bear?" And the man said, "I don't have to outrun the bear. All I have to do is outrun you." And we are to run the Christian race as though we are running to beat all others and to win the prize in the end. Listen to the Apostle Paul. Paul said, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and His grace which was bestowed upon me was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God which was in me." And when he came to the end of his life, the Apostle Paul could say, "I have fought a good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith." We are in a great race. And I think that it's appropriate to look at this race as a marathon. We talked about that last time. It's not a sprint, because it's a race that verse 1 says we must run with patience. The word actually means endurance. And so it's a marathon that we run, and we must run this race with all of our strength. Now, just before the national championship basketball game, you might hear players in the locker room say something like this: "Let's leave it all out on the court." Have you ever heard that expression? That means don't leave anything in the locker room. Don't hold back. Let's not lose this game and then have to say afterward, "I didn't give it all I had." Now, wouldn't that be a horrible thing? You get to the most important game in all of your life and you don't give it your all. And this is an apt description of the Christian race. We cannot give 10%. We cannot give 50%. But we must commit 100% to the race that is set before us. Now, some people may say, Christ is an important part of my life. And others may say He is a very prominent part of my life. But the one who wants to win the race says Christ is everything in my life. So we are in a marathon race. Now you should know that the race that is set before you is a long race. It is the race of life. And you have a course to run. We saw all of that last time. And furthermore, you must finish the course. The book of Revelation makes this point very clearly. And one of the great messages of Revelation is, to him that overcometh, I will give this and that. Let me just read these to you. Revelation 2:7 says, to him that overcometh, I will give to eat of the tree of life. Revelation 2:11 says, he that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. Revelation 2:17 says, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth. Revelation 2:26 says, he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. Revelation 3:5 says, he that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot his name out of the book of life. Revelation 3:12 says, him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God. Revelation 3:21 says, to him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Do you get the picture that it's important to overcome? And certainly the book of Revelation is a lot about overcoming. How different this message is than the one that is preached when we manipulate someone down the aisle to make some decision, and we have him utter some rote prayer and then hand him a certificate of salvation. And he walks out thinking the prize is won with no race whatsoever. It was necessary even for the great Apostle Paul to strive to the very end. It was necessary for Paul to fight the good fight. It was necessary for him to run the course and to keep the faith. And it was necessary, if it was necessary for him, then of course it is equally as necessary for you and for me. This is, after all, the very message of Hebrews, which we have now preached for 43 messages. There were some Hebrews in the churches who had professed Christ with their mouths, but who, because of hardship and because of persecutions, they were backing out of the race. And the writer of Hebrews is imploring, begging them to keep pushing forward in the faith of Jesus Christ. They are tempted to retreat to the race of Judaism. But the writer of Hebrews says, lift up the hands which hang down, lift up the feeble knees. That's found in verse 12. Look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 12 in our text for this evening. He says there, wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Now, many of you, if you think back over your Christian life, at times you have grown weary, haven't you? Or is it just me? I think all of us have grown weary at times. You've grown weary with the course that is set before you. You have grown weary with the obstacles that you have encountered in the race. You have grown weary with the trials and with the troubles that try your faith. But I would suggest to you that there has no trouble that has come upon you that is not from God. We believe that God is sovereign over this universe, and His hands are never off the steering wheel. Now, there was a church down in Mississippi several years ago, and a tornado came through, and it obliterated the church building. It was carried away, and there was nothing left standing of that church building. And when they interviewed the pastor on television, he said, "One thing we know that God had nothing to do with this." And that is exactly the theology that permeates the religions of man. Of course God had something to do with it. Who is in control of the winds and the waters and the earthquakes and the volcanoes if it is not God? Is it Satan who is in control of the forces of nature? Are the forces of nature just left to chance? No, these are all obstacles that God puts before us in the race of life. He brings a tsunami here and an earthquake there. And He brings an illness here and another heavy burden there. And He brings disappointments here and disillusionment there. And all of this is the race that we must run. Now, most runners these days have trainers. You know, it used to be athletes didn't have trainers. You just sort of trained yourself and you went out there and you ran the race. But these days, everybody has trainers. And the trainer makes the runner run hard training courses to prepare for the race. And the runner often gets mad at the trainer because the trainer seems to be a harsh master. And God is the greatest trainer of Christians of all times. God has the rod of discipline in His hand, and He has all the resources of the universe at His disposal, and He will train the Christian in the way of faith and in the way of holiness from the beginning to the end. Now, we are unholy brutes when we begin the race. But when God has fully trained us, we will be trained in the way of righteousness. Now I want to take a look at the specific commands which are given here in Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 12. And you will see that it says in verse 12, "Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down." And if I can add the verb to that last phrase as well, lift up the feeble knees. And then you also see that we are commanded to make straight paths for your feet. And then in verse 14, we are commanded to follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Now let me consider, first of all, this phrase, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. Now, it is clear that what this means in the figurative language is that if a runner's hands are hanging down, if his knees are becoming weak, and if he's wobbling all over the racetrack, then obviously he must reach down into some reserve of strength. In sports language, we call it digging deep. You have to dig deep to make it to the end of the game. You get tired. And people will tell the athlete, "Come on, man, dig deep. Lift those hands up. Kick those knees high and run straight." Now, that's what it means figuratively. That's what the analogy is talking about for a runner on a track. But that is all language to help us understand spiritual truth. What does it mean for our hands to be hanging down and for our knees to be feeble and for our paths to be crooked? What does it mean for us to lift up our hands which hang down, and to lift up our feeble knees, and to run a straight course? All of these figures are written to benefit our Christian walk. Obviously, the hands hanging down and the feeble knees and wobbling on a crooked path denote the tendency that we all have to grow weary and to abandon our Christian duties. And when we grow weary, we might become less resolute, and our courage will fail us. The hands hanging down would seem to be a sign of spiritual exhaustion. This is what happens to a runner. At first, his hands are high, and he's swinging his arms, and he's full of strength and vigor. But when he gets toward the end of the race, and he's tired, and he's weary, and he's exhausted, the hands fall down. The same is true of a boxer. At the beginning of the fight, his hands are up and he's protecting himself, but later his arms are weary and they come down with exhaustion. And it also, I think, conveys the picture of despondency. You can become despondent in the race. It pictures the one who has slowed up in the race and who has resigned himself to the reality that he cannot win the race, and even that he cannot finish the race. And we should always be on the alert for sagging hands and feeble knees. We should watch for it in our own lives and also in the lives of others. For when the hands begin to hang down and the knees begin to become weak, then the person is about ready to quit the race. There are many things which might cause your hands to hang down and your knees to grow weak. Only you know what weakens you the most. Perhaps it is the constant battle with sin that drags you down. Maybe it's that old enemy within you, the sin nature, that causes you the greatest distress. We are in a constant warfare with that evil nature that we were born with, and you might grow weary in the struggle. Others may grow weary because of the lack of apparent success in their Christian life. Perhaps they grow disheartened because they serve the church and they serve God year after year with no apparent success. Some of us are prone to be discouraged if others even just speak evil of us, or even if others fail to pat us on the back. It's easy to get discouraged and disheartened, isn't it? And instead of pumping those arms, the hands begin to hang down and the knees get feeble. Just like the trainer would say, quit feeling sorry for yourself, get those hands and knees up, go on with the race. That's the way we should be encouraged. Get those hands up. Lift those knees. Run the race. Most importantly, go on with the race. Don't quit. Now, the question would be, though, how do we go on? You know, how are we to lift up the hands and the knees? Do we have the strength to do it? And the simple answer, the one that doesn't really do us much good, is to say, well, we don't have the strength. We must rely on God's strength. That's obviously true. But let me just say that I think there's another answer to this, and I think that you and I have strength that the world does not know about. We have a reserve of strength. We are, after all, God's new creation. We have been quickened, and we have been made new. We have the help of the Holy Spirit of God. We have a strength and a power within us that is greater than any obstacle that God brings in our way. Christians, in their greatest weakness, yet have strength to endure. God has breathed life into our souls, and He has made us able to run the course to its conclusion. Take a look at 1 Corinthians 10 again. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. It says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. There hath no temptation taken you. I think you can look at temptation not as just being a temptation to do evil, but as a trial, a burden, a heavy load. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to what? To bear it. So the answer is that God has in fact given us the strength to continue on in the race, no matter what your circumstances are. Let me assure you that if you are God's elect, that God has not abandoned you. The only question is whether you will abandon God, whether you will step out of the race. And if you are His, let me say, you will not step out of the race. So let me say, lift up your hands and lift up your feeble knees. There is a reason why you are suffering. God has a purpose in it. It's not just arbitrary. It's not for no reason whatsoever, but God has a purpose in the trials that have come your way. It is by design and not by chance that trials and discouragements have come upon you. And then also know that these trials that you face will produce in you the fruit of righteousness. The sufferings that you endure are not in vain. When it is all said and done, you will be a better man or a better woman because of the training you are receiving. So don't get discouraged. Rather, lift up your hands that hang down and lift up your feeble knees and run straight and true. Lift up your hearts, in other words. Be full of energy for the race that is set before you. We really don't have time in the Christian life to dilly-dally around, do we? I don't know where that phrase came from, dilly-dally, but it sounds good. Sounds like you're dilly-dallying. And we don't have time for that. We don't have time for despondency. We don't have time for discouragement. The days are passing by one, and there is more of the race to run. Now let me move on quickly here. The next thing it says, make straight paths for your feet. Obviously, a runner must keep his eye on the course, and he must run a straight path. I don't know if you remember in mathematics, but they also always taught us that the shortest distance between two points is what? A straight line. If you want to get there the quickest, you run straight. You don't go sideways here and there. It makes the course longer. And it says here, make straight paths for your feet. Now, if you veer off left or right, then obviously you will be traveling a greater distance. Now, some of the time on trips, I often take a wrong turn, don't I, honey? I take wrong turns quite often. And when we have gone 40 miles out of the way, then we have to stop and get new directions. And the Christian race is much like that. Whatever course God has set before us, we must keep our eyes ahead of us and run a straight course. Now, actually, when it says to make straight paths for your feet in verse 13, the idea is to make even paths. It is a good idea to remove unnecessary obstacles out of your way. Some things along the race course might be avoided so that you might not be hindered. You know, there's all kinds of directions we can go in life, some of which hinders our Christian race. If a runner is running along a dry path and there is a slimy, murky swamp to his side, he would be foolish to try to run through the swamp. It would slow him down. My grandmother used to live in Morongo Valley, California. Anybody know where that's at? Brother Mark probably does. It's near Palm Springs. and it's out in the desert. And whenever we went to visit her, there was absolutely nothing to do but go out in the desert and walk around. And we used to hike around her house there. And if we got off the path and tried to rough it, we would come limping home with cactus thorns and sore feet. And the Christian life is that way. It says, make your path even and straight. If there are distractions along the way that would slow you down, maybe it is a good idea to avoid those distractions. Janine and Marion recently told me that they were thinking about giving up the casinos in Tunica. No, I'm kidding you. You know I'm kidding. But if they were going to the casinos in Tunica, it would be a good idea probably to avoid those paths. You see, there are some paths we can take that are not the best to run the race. Now, it is most important to run a straight, even course when the hands are hanging down and the knees are feeble. That's the best time to run a straight, even course. If the knees are lame, it is reckless and foolish to run off course, because that is not the best place for weak knees. Rather, set your eyes upon your spiritual goals. What is it that God has for you? What is the course that is set out for you? And once you find that out, run a straight, even path with no unnecessary distractions, and your knees will heal up. I think that's what that's saying here. Look at Hebrews 12:13. And make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame, maybe those feeble knees, be turned out of the way. You might even break your knees if you get off the path. But if you stay on the path, it says, but let it rather be healed. So it's a good idea to make your path straight, and then your weak parts will become stronger. But let me finish up now and say that there's another command in verse 14 for us who are running the race. And these are very good principles for all of us to follow at all times. It says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man can see the Lord. Now, keeping with the analogy of the race, when we are running away from the starting line and we are running to the finish line. We are running away from something and we're running to something. If you think back in the ministry of John the Baptist often told the Pharisees to flee the wrath to come, you see. So it was necessary to run away from something. And he told the Pharisees, you better get running. The wrath of God is on your trail, and it is about to overtake you. And in a very real sense, we are running away from a former way of life and to a new way of life. And we are to run fast and leave the former things behind. Now, if you used to be a drunk, you flee and you run to sobriety. If you used to live a life of fornication and adultery, it's necessary to run away from that and run to a life of purity and uncleanness. If you used to be an angry brawler, you run to a life of peace. And that is what it says in verse 14. It says, follow after peace with all men. Now, this word follow, when it says follow peace, it means to chase after it. It means it's not that we're to tiptoe after it or lag behind it or just barely keep it in sight, but we chase it. And we chase it like a hound chases a rabbit. Anybody ever seen a hound chase a rabbit? He gets after it. And we pursue it with all that we have. It says, chase after peace with all men. In the Christian race, one of our principal duties is to live at peace. And notice it says, follow after peace with all men. Now let me say to you here this evening that not all men are going to try to live at peace with you. Have you found that out to be true? But we are to pursue peace with all men. I suspect that that means that somewhere along the way, we are going to have to humble ourselves. And we're going to have to bite our tongues, and we're going to have to give way to others. even when they are wrong and we are right, I suspect we are going to have to give way at times. And that is a good thing. Humbleness is a good thing. Considering others better than ourselves is not only a good thing, but a biblical command. And the peace that it brings is a good thing. And that's why it says, chase after peace with all men. But it also says in verse 14, to chase after holiness. You see that? Chase after peace with all men, and also chase after holiness. Without which, by the way, no man shall see the Lord. This is the principal thing that we are chasing in this life. It is holiness. God has saved us for the purpose that we might be holy and without blame. Our ladies know that from Ephesians 1:4. And it says there that He has saved us and chosen us that we might be holy and without blame before Him. Let me say to you tonight that it is a very hard chase to chase after holiness, because we have started out so far behind. The rabbit has taken off and has a long head start on the hound. But our duty is to chase that rabbit of holiness until we finally catch up with him on the other side of eternity. Now notice that it tells us to chase after holiness. I think this implies that it is something that will never be caught in this life, else that command would not make sense. But from now until the end of our life, we are to chase after and to follow after holiness. What would you think of someone who came to you and said, I have finally caught that elusive rabbit of holiness. I have now reached the perfection that once I was chasing. Why, we would know better than that. Our duty is to follow after it and to chase it down with all of our strength until finally God will give it to us in all of its fullness when He changes this body. Well, I'm going to conclude by saying that in the great race, in this great race of the Christian life, it is necessary to keep your eyes ahead. I hope you've thought about that. It's very necessary in a race to keep your eyes focused on the next step and the next few steps. It's a very dangerous thing if you keep looking behind you. Take a look at Philippians 3:13. Philippians 3:13 says, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended. See, Paul knew that he hadn't chased down the rabbit yet. He says, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind. Now, Paul did not look behind him and see all the rocks that he stumbled over. Paul didn't keep looking behind him and say, I sure have regrets about doing this and that. I sure messed up back there. No, because there's more of the race to run. And so you keep your eyes off of what's behind, those failures of the past, perhaps, those stumblings that you had before, and you keep your eyes focused ahead. And that's why it says in verse 13, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth, that's ahead of you, unto those things which are before. He says, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So there you have it. There's some helpful hints for running the race. I hope that's helpful to you, to all of us, as we run this great race. Stand up with me, please, and let's be dismissed. Brother Mark, would you dismiss us this evening?